When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
I think this is a chance to storytell, and that's what I did with all these Hall of Famers.
This is Saverin on Steelers.
Hello to everyone out there in Steelers Nation, and welcome to Saverin on Steelers podcast. I am said person, Stan Saverin, bring you weekly Steelers content, twice weekly, actually. Hope you enjoy the podcast. If you do, please let your friends, neighbors, and relatives know that we have the podcast up and running. We do two new ones per week. You can get us at Steelers.com. If you haven't found us already, glad you did, and please continue to listen. Try to present Steelers content to you each time we're up and podcasting. Watching this New York Jets, Steelers, of course, had a bye week last week. Watching this Bills and Jets game, which we saw here in Pittsburgh, don't know if you were able to see that game, it was eerily similar to what the Jets did to the Steelers, what they did Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. That is, play it tight, play it close, and then when they have opportunity to grind out a victory, they did exactly that. Now, there was one difference in all this, and that was that in the Steelers-Jets game, the Steelers ground out the clock to protect the lead. In this particular game against Buffalo, again, against a very good Buffalo defense, ranked number one in many categories going into that game, they were in a tie football game, but they were able to possess the football largely on the ground, get in position to A, kick a game-winning field goal, but B, exhaust the Bills of all their timeouts so that Josh Allen, who did not have a good game, had very little wherewithal to come back and tie or win the game themselves. And I was thinking back to that. After the Steelers lost to the Jets in that fashion, where they allowed the Jets to continue and control the ball for 6:33, and when the Steelers did get the ball back, Kenny Pickett threw an ill-advised interception, I began to think, a lot of people after that game said, hey, don't sell the Jets short. They're building something there. They've invested high draft choices primarily on the offensive and defensive line. Yes, they used the number one draft pick at quarterback in Zach Wilson, but they began their restructure along the lines, which is really where it should be. And I began to think, after many people mentioned that after the game, well, maybe the Steelers' loss to the Jets wasn't all that terrible. Maybe the Jets are slightly better. I don't think it excused what happened to the Steelers. Whether the Jets are improving or not, the Steelers said they thought they'd have a great defense. Well, they got shoved around for those last 6 minutes and 33 seconds, and it cost them the game and put them in a position where they had very little opportunity to come back and win. So I don't know if I'm buying that, but I do buy into the Jets are sitting there at 6-3. There must be something to what they're doing it, and by the way, they're doing it in arguably the best division in football. The Dolphins, the Bills, who I still believe are among the top two teams in the AFC, the Patriots are over 500, and certainly the Jets now are. So maybe there is something to the fact that the Jets are better than we initially gave them credit for. I think that's a fair assessment. But I also think that it underscores the Steelers' weaknesses. How will that manifest itself in the last 9 games of the year? They're sitting at 2-6. You as a Steeler fan, I would imagine, I'm guessing now, you tell me otherwise, but I would imagine that there are mixed feelings. A fan who is dedicated to his team is never going to be happy when they lose. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it works. But maybe as a consolation prize, if the Steelers lose a game, it helps their draft status. And I don't know, maybe you still have hope for salvaging something out of this particular season. But being honest, in order to make the playoffs, they'd have to win at least 7 of their remaining 9 games. Now, granted, the schedule is not nearly as tough. Based on opponents' records only, the Steelers played the toughest schedule of any NFL team in the first half of the season. That's a fact. Now, maybe some of those teams that were 500 are going to fall under. Of course, the reverse can be true as well. But there's no doubt that they played a very demanding schedule. The second half of the schedule, if you will, the last 9 games, only 2 teams currently are above 500. 7 of the 9 presently, that can change, are not. But just looking at the quality of opponents, it should be, quote, easier. Nothing's easy in the NFL. It should be easier. But what do they actually gain by winning, let's say, 6 of the 9 games and finishing 8-9? You've really modified your draft position. And not that I would ever advocate for a team to lose on that basis, because look, the players currently on the team, they're not worried about next year's draft picks. They're worried about their own fates and fortunes. And if they don't play well, the Steelers aren't going to want them around. And neither will other teams. They'll be less valuable on the trade market. And certainly, if they're eligible for free agency, if they play poorly individually, teams don't value them on reputation. They look at the tape and say, what did you do? What have you done? And yet it's hard not to keep at least part of your vision and focus on positioning in the draft. Right now, they're top 5 or 6. 8 and 9 would ruin that. Four and 13 or something like that would enhance that. We're already experiencing that to a degree. Viewing the games on Sunday, it had totally escaped me when the score for the Miami Dolphins-Chicago Bears game came up that I ought to be rooting for Miami. Why? Well, not because I'm worried about the Dolphins, don't care one way or another about them and their playoff fortunes, but because by beating the Bears, it gives the Steelers a better pick in the second round for that Chase Claypool trade. Now, it's also true that by rooting for the Bears to win, it might hurt the Steelers' chances in the first round of the draft because the Bears are in contention. They're 3-6. The Steelers are 2-6. But right now the focus is on that second-round pick that they got for Chase Claypool, which I believe was an excellent trade. You give up a second-round guy, you're going to get more in return in terms of where you drafted Claypool as for what your return's going to be. So it's a mixed kind of message. Yes, 9 games to go, a lot can happen. But yes, deep down inside, if the Steelers lose, it enhances their draft position, and that's no way to look at an entire season. But in all honesty, that's where we're at. The Steelers have always prided themselves on building through the draft. In fact, in 1979, after their 4th Super Bowl win, there was a lot of conversation about every player who won a ring that year was homegrown, drafted, or signed as a free agent by the Steelers, and that was true for much of the decade. They would like to replicate that, if at all possible.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The draft has an amazing legacy with the Steelers. And we're joined now by Jim Wexel. He's covered the Steelers for a very long time. Steel City Insider. He's written a number of books. The last one was about Troy Polamalu, but there's a brand new one out. It's entitled On the Clock, Behind the Scenes with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the NFL Draft. And Jim joins us now. Jim, I just wanted to mention, it's a great book, a terrific read. I think any Steeler fan would just love this book to death.
Well, I thought going into this season that I could begin the marketing earlier than next March or April, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about the draft right now. They traded Claypool for a high draft pick. We're all watching how the Bears are doing now. What's that pick? It went from 43 to what? So that's just a little kind of comic relief there. But you know how much I've loved the draft over the years. And I think this is a chance to storytell. And that's what I did with all these Hall of Famers. You know, even, you know, Joe Green's high school, there's stories about him scaring another team off the bus. Terry Bradshaw's javelin throwing. I love all that. And when you can, you know, put it together in story form instead of encyclopedic form, and thereby all these pieces built Super Bowl teams or just Hall of Famers, or as Greg Lloyd said about the 90s, we rekindled the spirit and set it up for the 2000s. So that's the history. The draft tells the history of the Steelers. And I felt putting it in story form makes it a history book, an interesting, fun history book for not just young guys, you know, young people. It should be in every young person's library with the Polamalu book. I definitely feel that way. Our generation, Stan, we can appreciate the stories about Bill Dudley. You know, they remind us of our time, you know.
Well, it's interesting because I've got the book in front of me, and I've read almost all of it. But for those who are just being initiated to the book, is it a story about individual players? Is it about the Steelers' philosophy behind the draft? Is it about, for example, look behind in the war room, what goes on draft day?
Well, there's a little bit of all of that. It tells the history, and there's not of a how they do it, because that's evolved. You know, as I pointed out, Grantland Rice may have been their first scout. He wrote up Wizard White and Bill Dudley really big late in their careers, and the Steelers were reading out of draft magazines at that time. And then Bill Livingston, future Pittsburgh Press sports editor, he was their first paid scout. There's a newspaper guy. And we all know the great newspaper guy, Bill Nunn.
Bill Nunn.
So there's a lot of newspaper guys involved, but I take you through the evolution of, Art Jr. took over in 65, I believe he took over. It was a bit of a joke by his dad. He went home and told mom, I want to work for the team. And mom said to dad, you got to find a place for Artie. And dad said, well, Betty Parker traded away all the draft picks, so that's a safe place to put Artie. Put him in head of personnel. But 5 years later, the chief said it was the smartest move I ever made.
Yep. I'm wondering about this dedication to the draft. I mean, most teams should do that. They have to do that. But I'm wondering when Dan came in, and took over for the chief, the day-to-day operations. Is that where we're building through the draft? Is that really where it started?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. The newspaper men of the day complained about the hiring of Buddy Parker, saying that they needed a GM, and this guy has no regard for drafting, and they felt drafting was the wave of the future. And this is in the 50s. So even some of the newsmen were pretty astute at the time. And then, you know, by the time Dan had the power to say no to Buddy Parker, all the, you know, the rest of the 60s were just obliterated by trading of draft picks. So, yeah, when Dan came in, and then, you know, Dan opened up his Pittsburgh Courier one fine day, didn't recognize any of the names in Bill Nunn's respected black college All-America team in 67. And he knew this paper came out of Pittsburgh, and he ran the banquet for Bill Nunn every year at the Hilton. And he said, why don't I know any of these guys? What are my scouts? How come Bill Nunn doesn't cover this team? He went down to the lobby of the Roosevelt Hotel, said to the guy who was there from the Courier, where's Bill Nunn? Why doesn't he come here? And Dan Rooney was told, he thinks you guys run a clown show. And so Dan set up a meeting. I want to talk to Bill Nunn about his opinions on this. Bill Nunn was a Cleveland Browns fan. He would drive from the Hill District with his buddies to go see the Browns. And Dan asked Bill, why don't you cover this team? And Bill told him, you know, you guys are a joke, and I think you're racist. I don't know about you, but I know Buddy Parker was. I have a good idea Bill Austin is. And I just think it's a complete, clown show. And Dan hired him. But, you know, Bill was allowed to keep his Courier job. And there are some funny incidents where holding both jobs as a part-time scout and the talent evaluator for the Black College All-America team for the Courier, he would hold guys off. He held Elsie Greenwood off the Courier All-Star team in the hope that the Steelers would get a late-round sleeper. And they did. So he played some of those games, and I had fun writing about that, too.
Oh, boy, Bill Nunn, what a great gentleman. How long did it – it's a chicken or the egg thing, Jim. How long did it take Bill Nunn to gain the confidence of Art Rooney Jr. And the other members of the Scouts and Dan Rooney? Did it take the signing of some of these L.C. Greenwood and you know, Joe Green and Dwight White? Is that what he had to do to prove himself?
Well, Bill has, you know, Bill has passed, and he hasn't said. I found no record of his opinion other than he really wanted Chuck Knoll, and he and Artie. You know, Artie said that he came around quickly, but what is anyone going to say about Bill Nunn then? Oh, yeah, I agreed with him right away.
Right.
So I can't be positive, but Artie said he came around right away. And then, you know, when Chuck Knoll was being hired, when he was being interviewed, Artie barged into the interview room and wanted to know if he was going to draft athletes, if he was going to draft black athletes. And, you know, Chuck said something like, I'm only prejudiced against slow people and stupid people and things like that. You just find me athletes. And Art and Bill Nunn were just overjoyed to hear the rhetoric that came from Chuck Knoll. And sure enough, first day Chuck was hired, he was, okay, now let's go to the draft board. I think the draft was within a week. I forget exactly. But that first draft was right away, and Chuck wanted to check the draft board, and he was relieved that they had the same respect for Joe Green, because he had been hearing about Terry Hanratty, as was the word around town, with that fourth pick. But Chuck really wanted Joe Green, and Artie says that he did too, and they had no problem with all of that.
Oh, it's interesting. It would have been very close because, you know, Chuck had been with Baltimore, and they were defeated by the Jets in the big upset, and then he became available. So, yeah, the hiring couldn't have come, you know, much before that. And back in those days, the draft was held, I think it was on the last Tuesday in January in general. I don't want to give away all the great stuff in the book, but the story about Joe Green scaring people, tell us that story, Jim, and I won't ask you to reveal anything more about the stories in the book.
He was a frustrated young man. He felt he lived in a racist town in Texas, and the black high schools never got coverage from the local media, and they had to bus around to get on the right field, and he ran with the wrong crowd, too. He was a junior in high school, and he lost to a team, I believe, from Waco, I forget the name of the town that Joe was in, but it was a home game. Joe walked in to get his usual post-game ice cream or whatever he eat after the game at the ice cream place, and the opposing quarterback was eating an ice cream cone. Joe took it out of his hand and shoved it in his face. And one of the quarterback's teammates threw a bottle at Joe. And once Joe recovered, the place emptied. They ran onto the bus. Joe chased them. The bus driver pulled the door shut, and Joe just ripped open the door slowly but surely and got them open. And by then, the team had poured out the back of the bus and run away. So he was only a junior in high school.
Yeah, the mean Joe Green, yeah, it rhymed and all that, but he came here with a demeanor. There's no question about that. And look, hey, the guard's name, as I remember from Denver, was Paul Howard, and he punched him in the stomach. I'm surprised his fist didn't come out the back of his spine. And we remember the incident with Bob McKay, the Browns' offensive lineman. So his reputation preceded him. Jim, when you look back, what did you learn about the Steelers' approach to the draft in doing your research and writing the book?
Well, you know, Dan Rooney was – I think it's more about the people. You know, Dan Rooney made it a priority and went and got Bill Nunn. And Bill Nunn teaming with Chuck Knoll was devastating for the rest of the NFL. And I don't know that a philosophy was there other than Chuck wanted athletes and Bill Nunn opened the keys to the kingdom. And just the study of Bill Nunn and the people he knew and the information he was able to glean over his scouting contemporaries. You know, those guys went to the black colleges too after a while. And I made a line in the book that when Bill Nunn was seen spotting, was spotted scouting a particular player, it was like the chief being spotted in line at a racing track. And who was he going to bet? Who was Bill Nunn looking at? Same thing. It diminished the value of the player right away. So they had to guard against what Bill Nunn was actually doing. Or it became a thing to look and see who Bill Nunn was leaving off the college All-America team, because that would be a tip as to who the Steelers thought they could get as a sleeper. But, you know, and it developed off of that. And I don't mean to leave out the 90s and the aughts, and that all developed as well. You know, Tom Donahoe. I'll tell you one philosophy is that it's still up to the coach. It's the head coach. He leans on his personnel director and general manager, but it's the head coach. You know, when Chuck was arguing with Art Rooney Jr. about Franco, and Dan Radakovich from Penn State, who was with the Steelers, finally talked Chuck into drafting Franco. Radakovich looked at Chuck and said, take him. And Chuck said, all right, let's take the Penn Stater. And he turned around and looked at his personnel director, Artie Jr., and said, you better be right.
Robert Newhouse. Robert Newhouse is the guy that Chuck wanted. And there's a whole chapter called The Penn Stater. Joe Green has said everything changed once Franco came aboard. Jim, as always, let people know where they can buy the book.
Well, it's at Amazon, and it will be at my website very soon if you want autographed copies. And I'm going to have signings all over the Pittsburgh area, but right now it's at Amazon, but it won't be autographed.
Our deep thanks to Jim Wexel. Really, it's a terrific book. You'll enjoy it. Make a great Christmas gift for anybody, but get a copy for yourself. It's available on Amazon. And this is for, you know, many of our out-of-town Steelers folks who are looking for Steelers content. This would be a great book to have, and you may not have been aware of it otherwise, so we're glad to pass that along to you again. Jim Wexel, he's the author, respected journalist, and it's available at Amazon.com. A reminder that our Steelers on Savern on Steelers podcast is available. New editions up twice weekly. We're glad that you were able to find us. Hope you enjoyed the program. A reminder that I am on every day on ESPN Pittsburgh, 970 AM in Pittsburgh, or you can get it anywhere in the world, for that matter, on the iHeartMedia app. Just download the app. It is free. It is free for you to listen to the show every day. And a reminder that I'll be along with Charlie Batch after the postgame show, or during the postgame show, after the Saints game on Sunday. We get on the air about 20 minutes after the game is over. That's it for this edition of Savern on Steelers. I thank you for listening. So long, everybody.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it. Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.